nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
All right, so in last two lectures yesterday, in the first one, we talked about why variability and reliability are important problems. So, and I gave a set of examples showing that why Ohm's law may not be valid anymore and why reliability, the characterization of reliability, makes the notion of a oxide thickness partly irrelevant. So these are very important problems. So I started by giving you an introduction of the field of why this is an important, these are important topics. And in the second lecture, we discussed three concepts: percolation threshold, and island size distribution, and fractal dimension. But the bottom line was that when you look at a random system is really not random. Because had it been completely random, of course, you would have to, for each pixel of a picture, you'd have to keep a number for each one of them. And you couldn't do any analysis. But as we saw, that random systems are characterized by a given fractal dimension, that although two might look very, very different, but actually underneath, there's a very simple and elegant simplicity of this. And eventually, we'll use that simplicity of the randomness in some way and to calculate things that are of interest, right? Yesterday was essentially all geometry in some way. Now, today, we are beginning to calculate that transport properties through such random structures. And we'll see how it's done. Now, this part will again be a lot of theory work. The next lecture, lecture 4, I will show each one of the concepts that we are discussing now will have an experimental, corresponding experimental signature in the next lecture. So we'll follow this one just in preparation for lecture 4, where the experimental details will come in. So I'll start with the basic concepts of percolation, percolative conduction. I'll explain in a very simple way, something that requires no differential equation, no complicated things, just counting and binomial formula. Just on that, I'll show where this non-ohmic conduction comes from, why ohmic conduction is not routine. That will be the second thing. Now, that I can only do for very small channel length conductors, this cell-based percolation. I can do it for very small channel length devices. But for very large devices, random systems, let's say you are interested in solar cells. In a solar cell, you have amorphous material, electron going from one side to another, let's say. In that case, it's large. In that case, we'll have to do something called a renormalization. It sounds complicated, but I'll give you a very simple example. And then I'll talk about width, that why the notion of a width, that if you divide a transistor in three pieces and sum up the current, in principle, it shouldn't really matter that if you just divide it into three pieces, total current should remain the same. But in this percolating system, you'll see that that doesn't happen anymore. Very simply, and that has a very beautiful application in lecture 4, you'll see, right? So, in preparation for lecture 4 then, let's get started. So, if you remember, yesterday we discussed that as you get close to the percolation threshold, PC, in that case, the average island size begin to diverge. So, there is one island which is so big that you can start from any corner, and you can go to any other corner. So there is a road or a connected set of sort of byways that allows you to go from one side to another. Now, as a result, so this S average, the average size, becomes very large. But at the same time, just above PC, just above the percolation threshold, then there is such a big island that allows you to go at any point. That's the green curve. Now, there are lots of disks sitting in that green one, right? You can see that there are a lot of disks. But if you look at the fraction of the disks which are actually taking part in the conduction, that will be a few. Because you can see only a fraction. If you wanted to go from left to right, then you will see only the ones that are colored blue, those are the ones that take part in conduction. Now, there are other ones, of course, which are connected to the cluster, but these are like hanging branches that you want to, these are sideways, which is like a cul-de-sac, and it doesn't carry any current. As a result, what happens, that the percolation cluster, the big one, the green ones, that grows much faster. But on the other hand, the conduction, you know, you have a very thin path, just a single path going through. So initially, you have a very low conductivity. And as you throw more disk in, gradually the conductivity rises. And that's the blue curve. And what we'd like to calculate, yesterday we talked about this green curve, that how the island size grows. Today, we'll talk about how the blue curve rises out of that, that how the conduction associated with random systems will evolve. Now, the thing is, that's what I just explained, that around the percolation threshold, the island size could be very big, but the conduction could be actually very small. Now, one thing that I want to just point out very quickly, that these strength of the infinite cluster that goes away from P minus PC, P being slightly higher than PC with some exponent beta, and the sigma goes with a different exponent, because you can see these are rising at a different rate. This goes something with mu, and one of the issues in the percolation theory is how to connect this beta to mu and other things. But this is something that we are not going to discuss today, but in the homework and the lab session, you will get more practice for this one, how to calculate these things, and then you will get the notion of how this works. But let me get to the main point that we are interested in. Assume that you have a conductor of length L, which was initially insulating, let's say, insulating matrix, and these disks are conducting. And so as you put this, there is a, at some point, there is a percolating path going from left to right. And then there is a corresponding rise in the conductivity away from the percolation. Right? That's something easily understood. Now, what would have happened if I make the channel length a little smaller? Now, the obvious answer would be that if I make the channel length a little smaller, then I should be able to go from one side to another with a fewer disks, right? At fewer disks, I should be there, must be able to connect from one side to another. We're not talking about infinite system. Infinite system is one thing, right? Then in that case, you have, let's say, need 60% of the squares to be filled. But here, we are talking about finite system. So with channel length L, let's say you have a certain value PC, and if you make the channel length smaller, then what's going to happen is that the percolation threshold will move to a lower value, which simply means you need fewer disks to start the conduction process from one side to another. And what I want to show, that this shift in the percolation threshold is the basis of the nonlinearity or non-ohmic conduction. So the Ohm's law says, remember, for large systems much away from the percolation threshold, that the conductivity should not depend on length. So I have L to the power 0 on the top. And the conductance should go inversely as L. Now, what percolation theory says, and that will be shown in experimentally in the next lecture, that instead, sigma now go as almost like 1 over L. Now, L to the power 0.93, that is for the people who are expert in percolation theory to satisfy them. But for us engineers, it is 1 over L. So, it's, look, this should have been a constant, right? Q tau over M star. And then, now instead, I have this thing that's going as 1 over L. And moreover, the conductance will go as 1 over L square. This mu over nu is actually 1 over, it has a value of 2. So it will go as, instead of 1 over L, it will go as 1 over L square. So let me derive a formula that allows us to calculate this 1 over L square. Very simply, and you will see that no more than high school algebra is necessary to come to this result. Yes.
So one thing, when we are decreasing this size, so basically the grid points are also decreasing, right?
No.
Okay.
So we are saying that let's say you start with 100 by 100 system, then you make it 80 by 100, then 60 by 100. So the number of grid points are decreasing.
Grid points are decreasing. So, but then as the, I guess we are defining percolation in the sense that, okay, how many grid points are there then, and how many disks we are...
How many disks do I need in order to go from one side to another?
Okay, so, but since the, you're saying that, okay, now we require a lesser number of disks, but why is the ratio of the number of points available to the number of disks you need, why is that also increasing?
Because remember the definition of percolation. Definition of percolation says that you should be able to go from one side to another without any interruption, right? There has to be a continuous span. Now assume that a person wants to go from Indiana or from Lafayette to Illinois, let's say in Urbana-Champaign. The number of local paths that you need in order to connect this is far fewer than if you wanted to go from New York to Los Angeles, right? So the percolation threshold says how many local disks you need to connect two points. If the two points are closer, you will need fewer disks. So this is that analogy that sort of says why as you make the length smaller and smaller, then fewer disks is able to connect the two points.
But the ratio of the, and that ratio also decreases.
The ratio decreases, yes. It's not a constant. The constant that I defined yesterday was for infinite systems. So, as you make things, you can see sort of, right? If you had a 2x2, then of course the you'd be easily be able to connect it. You don't really have to wait for 60%. The 60% numbers that I talked about yesterday, these are for huge systems. Infinite thermodynamic limit. 60%, 50%. Remember yesterday I told you about? Those are for large systems. Today we are talking about transistors, which are small, and so therefore the properties will be different. Yes.
Yeah, but this thing should hold equally well in a large system limit.
Absolutely.
So how does this law scale into the large?
So that is the purpose of this lecture. That is, I am going to explain to you how it sort of works in a very small system, and then you sort of get the idea about how the pieces work, the moving pieces work, because then you can almost see that what the math is. In the large one, the math is a little bit more complicated, a little less intuitive, but you can see the signatures of this correspondence between the two. Right? These are all very good questions. I think this will clarify many of the issues. So let's talk about a very small conduction problem. Let's say I have a channel length of L and I have some grid of some dimension of A, so that on the channel length side, I have M blocks. And on the width side, I have N. So it means that it has a certain width, a certain cross-sectional area, and the electron is flowing perpendicular to it. I have that as N. Now the question I ask, when does the conduction begin? And I will restrict myself to the problem when a set of rates sort of lines up. That is the point when the conduction will begin. And the question is, of course, you can ask that, of course, it could have gone from one side to another through a curved path as well. We'll come back to that in a second. But let's assume that when I have a path field, a row field, in that case, the conduction will begin. So what is the probability of a field row? If P is the probability that each point is occupied, you want to have M of them in series, P to the power M, right? Now, the probability that you have one percolation path, and only one, not five, not six, one, then you will say, well, the probability is the capital P, and also have to make sure none of the other paths are connected, which is 1 minus P, N minus 1, N is the number on the width side, so N, and of course, this single one could happen at any point, right? And so, therefore, you multiply with N. So, that is the probability of one connection. What is the probability of two connection? At this point, you can say, well, I know how to do it. P squared means that two paths are connected. 1 minus P, N minus 2 says the remainings are not connected. And you have the binomial coefficient up front. Yes?
So we could have a case where, let's say, one path has one missing. And then, I mean, it's not a linear path.
Right. I'm coming to that. As here I'm saying, is when things are very small, you see, if you want to have a nonlinear thing, what will happen is that instead of p to the power m, you will require p to the power m plus 2. Let's say, card pi. And now if when p is small, p to the power m is actually much larger than p to the power m plus 2. We are neglecting in a short channel limit. Of course, those are important in the longer channel limit. And I will come to that. Right? But here you see, very simple. You're saying if it is just directly connected, then what would happen? Good. And you know this formula, right? If you have wanted to talk about n paths, then essentially you will have x to the power n, x being this p multiplied by n, because you can say that this 1 is negligible, multiply this n with p and square them, and that goes with this 2. And then this factor essentially becomes the exponential. You know this formula. So essentially, in general, don't worry detail about the details, you can check it out. So in general, if you have n paths connected, you will have p to the power n. Pn is given by this formula. Okay. Now, let's calculate something using this information. What is the probability that the system is below percolation? That means not even a single path has been connected, right? And that means that the probability of a single path not being connected is that 1 minus capital P to the power n. None of them are connected. And so what is the probability that it is connected? Well, that's not a rocket science. Is P naught. I just rearranged the term. I bring 1 minus P to the power n on the one side, and the capital P has been replaced by P to the power n. Now, do you see? This is when the percolation begins, because you have one path just completed. And do you see, and factor L is coming from the M, the factor L appearing there. And so this is already telling us that if I am given a length L of the channel, that at what point, at what probability that the system will begin to percolate, right? Now look at that L, and then let me plot it out a little bit. So the probability of conduction, first conduction happening, you can see is given by this series of curves. And this series of curves essentially is for different L. Different L means different M. And you can begin to see, even from this very simple one, that if you have this whole thing just one width, then a single disk will connect it. So it starts very early at a very small probability. And then it goes to 1, of course, right? And then you can see, as you're making the length larger and larger, of course, you need a few more disks in order to get this. And you can see how the percolation threshold, even in this very simple example, is shifting as a function of L. This is clear, right? This is simple. This is clear. But what is not clear in the next one is how this gives rise to non-ohmic conduction. Because there's nothing to it except once you realize what it's trying to tell us. Because what it's trying to tell us, that average number of percolation path, if you wanted to know, let's say you have a probability P and you have 500 samples. So you put same fraction of red disk everywhere. Now in some cases, with that disk, it will form one path. In some cases, it will form two, some cases three, you know, with a probability distribution. When it does that, the question is, on the average, how many paths do you have? You can easily calculate it. Because if there's one conduction path, then you will have P1, because you have one path. Now, if you have two paths, the number of samples that will have two paths is P2, but each one of them has two. So the total number of paths is 2P2. P2 simply says how many. And the number is you multiply. You get the idea. So you sum them up, you get a formula which will be n capital P, and then it's given by n small p to the power n. Just a sum. You have done this many times in your high school. Now the thing is, average number paths per unit area, how will you calculate that? Well, you'll divide that n, that is the average you just calculated, divide by n. N is the width, right? N is the width. And then it will give you a p to the power m. Now, let's calculate the conduction now. Let's look at this formula. G, I want to calculate the conduction of that conductance of that of their sample. Sigma rho is the conduction of conductance of each disk, each red disk. L, if the length is, if I have 5, then each one of them has a certain conductance. I have to divide by 5 in order to get the total one. This is for the whole row, and I have to do it by for each red one. N is the area. I multiply with the area, and this is the number of conduction paths I have. So that will give me the total amount of current that's going flowing through that. And once I do that, you immediately see something very strange appears. This part is a non-ohmic part. This is telling me that this conduction will not be anticipated by Ohm's law. I didn't do anything. I just looked at the percolation problem. The reason is, if P is close to 1, means it's almost full, then, of course, this P to the power L over A, that will be 1. You'll get back Ohm's law. Of course, we know that, right? When you have lots of disks, it's almost uniform, homogeneously conducting, we get back Ohm's law. But if P is not close to 1, if P is close to the percolation threshold, then you can see you will have a huge dependency coming from here. That extra dependency says that Ohm's law is not valid. Yes.
Sigma rho is
yes. Sigma rho? Yeah, that's why I have divided by L.
It is for each block.
No, this is the whole row.
Whole row. So if the L is large, the sigma rho will be less.
Sigma rho will be less.
It will be high. Means then, the sigma rho is a function of L. So this L dependence might cancel out in the
this L dependence. This L dependence is coming because in a given sample, this is a property of the sample. This is a constant. This L is coming the longer the channel is. This is going inversely with that channel length. Is that clear or no?
The conductivity of a smaller block is a constant, I can agree.
Right.
A square block.
Right.
But for conductivity for a whole row, it is dependent on L.
Oh, I'm sorry, sorry. This should be for a disk. This is a typo, I'm sorry. So this is for a one circle. W over L, and then the number of paths you have. This is W over L of the normal formula. This is for not for the row, this is for one specific disk, red disk. I shouldn't have said row. Okay. Now, the why is this nonlinear dependence? Where does it come from? This comes from the fact that you see, if you make the channel length smaller, do you see that there is this three rates sort of sitting there that is not taking part in the conduction? As you make the channel length smaller, the island which is sitting ideally doing nothing, all of a sudden becomes a part of the conduction process. Part of the conduction process. And therefore, as you make the length small, the conduction increases non-linearly. Right? You see this? Now, what I just proved to you is this formula. Now, what I want to prove to you is the formula for very large systems. Now, what is it that I missed in very small system was exactly the question that was asked, that I missed the card paths, right? This type of card paths, that should contribute, like P to the power M plus 2, those should contribute, and I didn't account for those. So, I made a mistake when for large systems, I cannot allow this mistake to propagate, because in large systems, what will happen? In large system, what will happen that there could be many paths associated with curved one. Direct path, you have just one. But curved path, the blue one, there can be many, many of these combinations that will allow you to go from one side to another. And very soon, then there will be this factor, and I'm not deriving it, there will be this factor that will give you significant enhancement in the conductivity, conductance, this extra factor. So let me not go into that, but just emphasize that if I do that, then the blue curve is for very small conductors. Red one is once you account for this curved path a little bit. But for really large system, I will have the black line, and I'm going to derive that black line right now. So g as a function of L and the nonlinearity of it. So let's talk about this. Now, this is something, it's a very beautiful and elegant idea. And you always wondered that this is something you could have come up with only if you were born in the right time. So it is sort of a very nice idea. Of course, yes, go ahead.
I have a question. When we are trying to model this, we're trying to do it classically, like it's connected as a path, but the electrons we give you the quantum particles. So how do we take the quantum mechanical effects into consideration? Do you think if we take those into consideration, will that affect the nonlinearity?
Right. So the question here is, we are the issue about the sigma for individual disks and how the electrons hop from one to another, those are all encapsulated in the sigma parameter. Now, of course, what will happen, if these assume semi-classical transport, that when you increase the disk by a length of, let's say, in linearly with L, then the conductance goes down as 1 over L. When you have 5, it goes as 1 over 5. When you have 10, it goes as 1 over 10. That means the scattering essentially is such that on that path itself, Ohm's law is obeyed. But as an aggregate, Ohm's law fails. You see. So if you wanted to do for quantum mechanics, then for the individual path, the physics will be based on the quantum mechanical wave functions and how wave propagates. But then you will have to sum up over the average. And there are quantum mechanical versions of percolation theory as well. Right? So the physics of the carrier transport is sort of hidden in that parameter sigma. But this is all we am doing is essentially just averaging over a series of such combinations. Okay? Now, two concepts. And that is why I was preparing you yesterday for this notion of self-similarity and then the renormalization. Self-similarity, you remember that if I have a structure, and this happens around the percolation threshold. Remember, at the percolation threshold, the island size becomes self-similar. Now, self-similarity simply means this, and you know this many times, you have seen this many times, which is that if you take a focus on one part of it and then blow it up, the blown up part will look exactly the same as the original part, right? That's what self-similarity means. Now, you can go inside again and blow it up, and this will keep happening. So self-similarity is an important property of the percolation threshold. We'll use it to calculate the percolation threshold. And renormalization is slightly different. And this is the best way to understand is by probably this Obama versus McCain election. And you should be able to understand what renormalization means by this. Renormalization means that, let's say, Indiana has 81 sort of counties, let's say. And in that case, it's a hypothetical example, of course. Now, in, let's say, depending on the county, there's Obama, O, and blue, you see Democrats, and M is McCain, and they have different counties have voted differently. And remember, this is just one segment, Indiana. Of course, there are many other states. So this pattern is repeating all over the country. Now, renormalization means that you'll have to give it a rule that how should I aggregate them and then follow the rule to change the scale. This is what I mean. So let's say I say the rule is that when I scale it up by a factor of 3, you know, I have this factor 3 by 3, then the majority is the winner in that one. So, for example, you can see on this corner, corner top, corner left, I have 5 O's and 3 M's. So Obama won in that one, presumably, for that 9 counties. And then you can keep counting on all of them. And I have done that. And you have just renormalized the votes. This is what renormalization means. Scale invariance, self-similarity is a different thing. I'm coming to that. Renormalization means you have a set of points. You give it a rule that how you're going to collect the points. And then you use the rule to come back up one scale. So now you have 9 effective things. And then you could have, remember, this is happening all over the country. So 49 states is doing the same thing. So you have rescaled by 1 level, factor of 3. Now, you could have done that another factor of 3. Now, in this case, Obama, if he won, then I'm correct perhaps. But the thing is, very small differences, if it is not at percolation threshold, very small differences in the initial voting will translate to a completely winner-take-all in one side or another, right? But what happens in the percolation threshold, because it is self-similar, no matter how many times you aggregate the voting, that with that rule, it keeps looking the same. And you cannot decide who won in the election. You see? So that is what happens in the percolation threshold. Slightly below, slightly above, winner takes it all. And that's what they have very sophisticated language, the attractors for various stable points. People do lots of complicated things. This is what they're trying to tell you. Now let's apply this to see whether we can calculate the percolation threshold and also for large systems, whether we can get this 1 over L squared dependence. Let's see that. Again, I just very want to quote. So the procedure will be, we'll take one part, we'll blow it up and have to make sure that they are self-similar, and we'll use this scaling preservation in order to calculate it. So let me give you an example that will simplify everything. 1D. 1D percolation. When will a system that is just a bunch of series of sticks or series of segments, when it will percolate? Well, when only way it can percolate if all the segments are there, right? You know the answer. Because otherwise what will happen, even if one segment is gone, you cannot go from one side to another. It's a linear path. So you know the answer. See how this renormalization gives you the answer. So here, again, you can think about Obama and McCain as being the blue and red. And here, let's say the scale is 2. I use the scale of 2. You see what I did? 0 and 1. And my rule is that if it's 0 and 1, then I make it more both of them 0. And otherwise, if it is 1 and 1, I make it both 1. And I use this rule. If it's both 0 and 0, of course, is 0. And I use this rule. Once I use this rule, you see, this rule is essentially that in the next level of iteration, it is simply p squared. So 1 multiplied by 0, that's 0, right? This first segment. And when you have 1 and 1, of course, that's 1. So I just multiplied them. Now, what should happen at the percolation threshold? That every level I do this, this should be scale invariant. It should look exactly the same. So if it looks exactly the same, and that is the condition for the percolation, remember? So as a result, you can see the solution of this equation is 0 and 1. So it will percolate only if it's completely full. Otherwise, it's essentially if it's all completely empty, meaning it's not percolate, but essentially the other one will percolate. Either 0 will percolate all the way or 1 percolates all the way. Right? So this is the answer. So you saw the procedure, right? We'll use this in 2D. Now, if this is clear, this is all there is to it. In renormalization theory, you will see thick books and lots of derivation with complicated Greek symbols. This is what they are essentially trying to tell you. Now, let's try to do it 2 by 2. The rule is here, when I want to aggregate, the rule is that whatever allows me to go from this side, left side to the right side, or you could make a rule from top to bottom, whatever bonds allow me to do that, that's 1. And then that will essentially give me the rescaled version. And I'll explain to you what it is. And so I'll scale up. I'll make this transform into this one, just like the Obama one. I will just transform into this scale using a rule, and the rule is that this, whatever bonds are there, it should allow electrons to go from this side to the other side. That's the rule. So let's see how it works. How many ways? Let's see whether you can count. How many ways electrons can go from this side to this side? Well, just four, you think? Let's try that. One way is that if all five of these bonds are present, right? Then electrons can go from this side to this side. There is path, so it can go. And what is the probability? Each side of the disk, each side of the segment comes with a probability P. I need all five to be present for this to happen. So I will have a P to the power 5, and I'm coming to that. The other way you can go is essentially if you have these two paths, you don't need this one to go from here to here. You could do it this way also, right? You could come halfway. This is not necessary. This is not necessary. And then you could do all this. This is not necessary. It's coming halfway. That's fine. But the other one will carry the path. And so there is not four, but a little bit more than four in 2D. And this is the formula of how it works. So don't worry about it. I mean, you know, you can do algebra. Let's see. P to the power 5 goes with the first one, right? What about P to the power 4, 1 minus P? 4 are present and 1 is missing. So 1 minus P. What about P to the power 4, 1 minus P? That's fine. You see, 4 segments are present. 1, 2, 3, and 4. 4 segments are present. The fifth one is absent. So 1 minus P, you know, this fifth one is absent. But there are 4 configurations, right? This 4, that one was drawn. So that's multiplied by 4, and you can very soon count it yourself. So you can do it. And then, what is the rule? That when you go up one scale, the P must be equal to PC, right? And in that case, that will give me the percolation threshold. So you will have to just solve the algebraic equation by setting this one, by setting P prime equals P. Because the probability when you scale up should remain the same at the percolation threshold. And if you do that, the answer will be P equals half, 0, of course, if it's not there at all, or 1. If everybody is connected, then electrons will go from one side. But the thing is, look at that half. Remember 50% we talked about in the beginning that people had to do by computers, and then fill factor and all those things, F multiplied by PC equals 0.45, all these things that we did last time. Initially, it all came from Neumayer computer simulation. But you see, this renormalization is saying computer is unnecessary because you can essentially get the same percolation threshold on a grid by doing this. And once you know it on one grid, you know it for all other grids. And you know it for all other shapes. So therefore, renormalization essentially allows you to calculate the percolation threshold in any dimension, by using this. But of course, you'll have to be able to draw these pictures, which in higher dimension, all mathematicians can do. Physicists have a little bit, or engineers have a little bit more trouble in drawing this in six-dimensional space. Okay. So that is what I just got, percolation threshold. But remember, I'm not interested in the percolation, just percolation threshold. I really want to know the conduction process, right? Non-ohmic conduction, that's what I know, want to know. For that, let's say Supreme Court changes the rule between Obama and McCain. It says one McCain vote is really like 1.75 Obama vote. Because, you know, Republicans are generally more intelligent and wealthy. So let's say this is higher. I'm joking. It could be true, but I'm joking. Now, I take the same thing as before. You know, votes have not changed. Obama, McCain, vote has remained the same. But you can see by giving it a different weight, the three. And then some of the cases where it was 4 and 5, now this previously Obama won, now McCain is winning. Because it's why you have to multiply with 1.75, right? And then, of course, the pattern will evolve and it will change. It will not be the same thing. And you are with a different rule, renormalization is different, right? Now, in a real conductor, isn't it all conductors equal, born equal? And therefore they should be counted equal? Not really. Here, McCain won. So Let me see, explain to you why all conductors are not the same. Look at this as far as conduction process is concerned, electron conduction, let's say. This blue one is completely unnecessary. Its vote doesn't count. Why? Because, you know, if you want to take an electron from this is 1 volt and this is 0 volt, and if you have 1 ohm, 1 ohm, 1 ohm, and 1 ohm, then the resistance of this is the same as the resistance of the other one. The blue volt, it voted, but it doesn't count as far as conduction is concerned, right? As a result, both of them essentially will have same conductance. So you have half because 1 ohm and 1 ohm, half of that. And these two are in parallel. So you have 1 half plus half, and the whole resistance is inverse of that, p to the power 5, because the probability of this configuration occurring is p to the power 5. Okay. And then, I don't have to explain this. You again get this factor. This is that vote, 1.75 I told you about, right? This is the voting. And this is the probability that a certain thing happened. And so, you sit down when you have a nice afternoon and you count this, all these things. And just count one for your convenience. I mean, some of them are very easy. You can see that here, the blue one's vote doesn't count, only this one matters. So I just have half to the power minus one. And essentially, you can count this all up. And you have to make sure that at this level, you want to see how the, as you're making the system larger and larger, how the conductance is changing as a result. Very, it should be pretty clear. If not, I should be able to explain it. Once you do that, remember this P and P, these two P at the percolation threshold has to be the same, right? Remember the I just explained? Now, if you put that in, that condition, what you will see that this ratio, as you go from channel length L to channel length 2L, channel length 4L, as you go, they'll make the length larger, then the ratio of these scales, conductivity, is essentially 1.97. And if you just take the ratio of the sizes, so for example, here I'm scaling by a factor of 2, so this size scale is factor of 2, you calculate what will give you, what exponent will give you 1.917, and that exponent is 1.93. And so from here, sigma becomes 1 over L to the power 0.93. Remember in the beginning I said for large systems, this one? And then the conductivity goes as 1 over L point 1.93. And that is the non-ohmic conduction. And what is the physics? As you make the length small, more and more paths can connect. Remember the short channel one? That is the essence of it. The math essentially just hides the basic physics. But essentially, non-ohmic conduction, therefore, is essentially a general property of the conductor. It has got nothing to do with that it's a spatial percolation course or this and that. This is what should happen all the time. Now, many times you are closer to the P equals 1 limit. So then ohmic law, you can apply it. But here, you should do it this way. Okay. Now, I have maybe few more slides. Let me quickly go through this. Hopefully, you can do it relatively quickly. So the bottom line is ohmic conduction is this. You can see for the percolative conductance, there is an extra L dependence that shows up, and 1 over L square for the conductance, and for the ballistic transport that Professor Datta and Professor Lundstrom talked about yesterday, and Professor Lundstrom might talk about today, then there is this sigma goes as L, and so the conductance will be length independent, right? Ballistic transport, you don't care about length. So you can see this Ohm's law is special case, really. Most of the time, if you are interested in ballistic or quantum transport or in percolation, very different L dependence is expected. And the point I want to make that if you are making new devices, many of you are making new devices, right? And you say, okay, I have learned something from my solid state device course, I will just plug that formula in and pull out whether it formula likes it or not, or experimental likes it or not, I'll pull out a mobility one way or other. Now you can see that you are putting yourself in a grave danger and shouldn't do that. Now, let me very quickly tell you, length dependence, it doesn't work, and the width dependence doesn't work also. Now, what does it work? So, if I take a normal conductor, then if I divide it into two pieces, three pieces, then I know the current will be one-third, one-third, and one-third. And therefore, the total current, if I just stripe it this way, nothing will happen. Current will not change. But you can see in a percolation case, that is not the case. Because if you divide it into like this, current before, you could have a certain amount of current before because there is a percolation path here. But after you stripe it, current will be zero. Why? Do you see why the current will be zero? Because the percolation path you had, you just cut the percolation path. You just stripe the percolation path, and all of a sudden, the smaller ones have higher percolation. Smaller width is giving you higher percolation. As a result, this current will be zero. So there is the current will change non-linearly. And so therefore, that formula you wrote is wrong, because this W dependence is not like you make it one-third and sum them all up. Current is not going to behave like that at all. So how are you going to do this problem? Very simply, all you have to do is to see how the percolation threshold changes as a function of width, and then put them together, and you will get the result. So I'll do that very quickly. So this is the idea. I told you that in one dimension, percolation threshold is P equals 1. So assume very narrow one-dimensional conductor. At 2D, very large 2D, 0.5, right? I just derived. So if my width is not finite of different sizes, then it has to be between these two limits, between 1 and 0.5. How are you going to get that? Very easy, because we already have all the formulations necessary to get the percolation threshold for this finite width thing. How would you do that? Realize that if you take a segment from here and try to renormalize up, you remember the voting, Obama-McCain voting, so I'm trying to do the voting here. And then you will take these four segments, put it in here and renormalize it and go up. Now the thing is, this rule of renormalization I already know. Remember this p to the power 5, p to the power 4, all the sums, things like that I summed up before? I use the same formula because I'm just renormalizing. I'm not still asking the question about width. And then what happens, of course, this is not at percolation threshold, right? Generally, it's not, because different one has different percolation. As a result, what will happen that you will insert in this formula the percolation threshold for this width. As a result, you will get the percolation threshold for the next one. And you take the percolation threshold for this one, you will get the percolation threshold for the next one. And this is how, as a function of width, you will essentially get the percolation threshold. And this is how it goes. This simple formula essentially tells you how the percolation threshold keeps moving. Right? And you start from 1, right? One dimension 1, and it goes to 0.5. And in between, as you're changing the width, this is how the percolation threshold will be moving. And as a result, what is going to happen, at 1, percolation threshold is 1. So you can see almost starts at this point. As you make things bigger and bigger, the percolation threshold becomes smaller and smaller. Eventually, it will become 0.5, right? It will start at 0.5. So the question is, how does the conductivity changes as a result? So again, same formula. You see, you don't have to do anything. I have already told you everything. Except, you'll have to just copy the formula. Remember this formula? This p to the power 5, this came from when the register network, I connected up the register network, and remember all of them didn't vote equally because some of them don't carry current. I use the same formula as before, except that this sigma and this sigma is the conductance of successive levels. Conductance of successive levels, and so that will also, you can calculate from here. So you start with 1 and you ask what is the conductance in the next level, conductivity in the next level, and you keep doing that. And if you do this iteration, what you'll find that this sigma, which should have been width independent, should have been width independent, actually changes quite a bit as a function of width. This is why the at the current, when you divide it, all of a sudden current drops to zero, because a point which was above percolation, yes, the percolation threshold has moved up and the current has gone to zero. And you can calculate various results from here as well. Now, this you will see in the next lecture. This sounds a little bit, you know, esoteric, but although the math is very simple, that how it fundamentally allows to you to make large circuits based on flexible electronics. This very simple thing, which is conceptually is, sounds a little strange, but we'll see experimental demonstration of this in the next lecture. So what did I tell you over this time? So first thing I told you is how to calculate conductance, right? Conductance through a short channel transistor. And then I said that the reason this nonlinear conduction happens is because as you make the length smaller, many islands which are sort of sitting on their own, they join in the action and they start carrying current. And I told you about short and long channel limits being very distinct, right? In short channel, mostly vertical paths. In the long channel, mostly curved paths going from one side to another. And that gives you a slightly different length dependence. But in both cases, the nonlinearity is obvious. And I told you about how if you change the width of the transistor, stripe it, then it changes. Thereby, you can change the percolation threshold and fundamentally change the transport properties of the network. Now, you'll see all this in action in the next class or next lecture. Okay, thank you. So, questions? Yes.
Can this be used to model trap or defects in a dielectric?
Like yes.
Normally, we do it with all the full frontal and tunneling mechanisms for short field mechanisms and you try to extract the barrier heights.
Yeah.
Can this theory apply to that and integrate some dielectric?
Yeah. So the question is that whether this particular way of viewing things can be used for understanding dielectric properties, right? The conduction in dielectric. Precisely, yes. The reason is that one of the things I hope at the end of the lectures you will take away with you is two things. One is random is not really random, right? That's what I want to emphasize. And second is, this length dependence, the same length dependence that you see that gives non-ohmic conduction, is the same physics which gives you a breakdown voltage, which is essentially is not a constant number anymore. Remember I told you about that the breakdown field used to be a constant for thick films. For thick films, thin films, essentially it's becoming a distributed parameter. Percolation theory, when you view it this way, it turns out all these phenomena that you, a normal person might not think about them as being connected at all in any way, turns out that it's manifestation of the same underlying physics. It's the same thing and just viewed in different ways. So hopefully you will see the connection by the time the lecture 8 is done. But that's the goal really. To make these connections, because otherwise it's just a bunch of topics that you can easily read from physics literature.
I do these IV measurements and I get different curves on different samples made at different runs. So even the statistical distribution is quite large. So I talked to the company which makes it, we work with a company called Chemo. So I talked to them, so they said they have no clue. And because they make capacitors, they don't really care about a small leakage current happening. But I see currents from like 400 nanoamps to 10 nanoamps. So it's a.
I see. Difference. Yeah, the question you are asking is a slightly different question. So you're asking is that in even at time t equals zero, when you get a sample, series of samples from a manufacturer, then your statement is that the distribution of current is quite varied. Now, I presume that you work on dielectrics, which are, you mentioned, what type of dielectric are these?
Tantalum pentoxide.
So, tantalum pentoxide is a lower band gap material compared to silicon dioxide, and it's a relatively thick film. So it has a lot of pre-existing defects. And presumably, if you look through in lecture 9, then where I discuss the theory of pre-existing defects, then that is what, this is different from classical percolation, but this is also another way of viewing percolation. So in fact, we'll go through that thing step by step in lecture 9, and you will see that island size distribution, which essentially says how many pre-existing defects pools you have at various points, that actually governs the initial leakage current distribution. So in that sense, it is directly connected to the percolation theory. It's a different application. Yes.
You talked about the self-similarity at the percolation threshold. So if I use this property, and from a large flusher, I use it a smaller one, the threshold should be same. I mean, it should be at 0.6. Why it is getting different for a smaller system?
No, large system. But in a smaller system, let's say I have a system so small that it's one unit away. So, and then let's say it's 100 unit wide, one unit thick. What is the percolation threshold? It should be 0.1, right? 0.01. Because you put one, shorted. And as you realize that if you make it a little wider, then you will need a little bit more in order to go from one side to another. If you make it really big, then in order to go from one side to another, you will need far more. So that's why when your width is very large and the length is very small, then percolation threshold should be very small.
Yeah. But if I think in this way, say 60% are connected for a
large system.
If I take a small block, then also 60% will be connected because it's self-similar.
Right.
Statistically,
not all, you know, in the Obama-McCain voting, you don't need, it's self-similar, but that doesn't mean that it is exactly self-similar in the regular sense. Okay, let me explain. You see, this is not, remember the park, where is the self-similarity? This I used as a special example. Here it is exactly self-similar, regularly self-similar, right? That means that every time you take something, blow it up, it looks exactly the same. It's a regular fractal. On the other hand, here, when you blow things up, the next level is not exactly the same because you are doing majority voting, just like Obama case, the pattern will change. Statistically, on the average, it looks the same. So, unless it is exactly self-similar, then your argument wouldn't work. Because in some of them, you will see it's not connected. In some of them, you'll see it's connected. On the average, the pattern will remain the same, right? So, there's a difference between regular and irregular fractals. Irregular fractals is a property of percolation clusters. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
For the denormalization, the rule by which we aggregate and form the cells, does it have to depend on what exactly, what property we are looking for in the percolation?
Sure.
Is there a way to know, like, for what, like, for once we have a conduction from left to right, or some, we may be looking for spaces, hole size. In that case, we'll have to adjust our
voting rules, yes. If you are interested in the fact that, let's say you want to make a bridge out of it or a net, and you are asking the question that if I push the net, can I deform it? Then the property which you are not voting before, the blue ones which are not voting before, will now vote because they will hold the truss a little bit more ably than before. So when you are interested in the elastic properties, then you will have a different voting rule. Then when in conductivity, then you have a different voting rule. If you just want to know the numbers, which is the percolation threshold, then you have a voting rule. So depending on the physical property that you're interested in, you will devise a voting rule that reflects the microscopic physics and then aggregate it over the whole system. Okay? Yes.
So, this method will help you analyze situations where the defects are formed randomly. But defects can form, a defect can have a higher probability of forming near the already existing defect.
Right.
So, how do you analyze those?
So this is a very good question, and again, when we discuss in lecture 7, this difference between correlated and uncorrelated defect generation, it will come to that. Here, so you always make a map. So if you are doing a process modeling, and let's say you have a bunch of sticks which are grown randomly, then you will use a random network model. If your physics is such that as soon as you have one defect, additional defects form nearby, then you will use another percolation model. That will be a correlated percolation model. And then you will analyze the property associated with that correlated model. Right? Obviously, you can see if one defect makes a possibility of another defect, formation of another defect in the same line, percolation threshold will be p to the power 5. So very quickly, it will essentially percolate. It will not do anything else at other points. So, of course, this will change depending on the situation.